From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Today, we'll meet this year's Miss Wisconsin and learn what it took for her to earn the title. Then, in our economy check-in, we'll learn how a local small business owner is managing the changing tariff landscape.
I probably have about a month left before I get into a really tricky spot where I kind of have to decide, do I take some of my products off the line? Do I completely change them? Do I shut down one of my businesses?
Plus, our latest Books and Beyond series explores the Wisconsin Concert Poster Collection.
The really fun thing is that this collection is, unsurprisingly, a lot of punk music, but it's also a lot of new age music, which was like the other big music genre that was in Milwaukee at that time.
All that's coming up on Lake Effect, but first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks for joining us. Racine native Willow Newell was recently crowned Miss Wisconsin. She's the first Black woman to hold the title. In the fall, she'll head to Orlando, Florida to compete in the Miss America competition. Since Newell was a teen, she says she's been thinking about what embodies Miss America. She joins WUWM race and ethnicity reporter Taryn Powell to talk about her journey through pageant competitions and her advocacy for the arts.
Let's talk about your win being crowned Miss Wisconsin. What does that feel like?
It's been almost a month now. I still wake up every morning and can't believe that it actually happened. Just because I worked for it for so long, I started competing when I was 14. And, you know, going into the pageant world, you always have the goal of winning the crown, but sometimes it doesn't always end up that way. There were times where I competed as a teenager and as an adult and would get first runner-up or not win the title or not even place. And so having the moment where I actually really made my dreams come true is such an honor. And it's not because of me. I'm so grateful for everyone who has been a part of this journey and supported me along the way.
So started at 14, what piqued your interest? How did you get started?
I knew there were scholarships involved, and a lot of people don't know that the Miss America opportunity is the largest provider of scholarships for young women in the country. And so as Miss Wisconsin, I won $15,000 in scholarships, but going into it as a teen, I knew I wanted to network, to earn some scholarships, and then also I always had a passion for being on stage and being in the spotlight because I knew that I wanted to highlight diverse stories and people of different backgrounds and cultures, and so I got involved because I knew the Miss America opportunity would give me that chance to be on stage and to be seen and to be heard, and then, of course, to earn those scholarships and those networking skills.
So when you started at 14, what was that first competition? What are the levels?
So we all start on the local level, and I won Miss Racine in November before I was crowned Miss Wisconsin. So there's local pageants throughout the state. Some are open. Some you have to live, work, or go to school in that city. And it's really an opportunity for a lot of women who have never competed before to learn what the organization is about. You go into the competition, you compete in evening gown, talent, onstage question, fitness, which a lot of people used to know as swimsuit. They changed it to health and fitness. And then a personal interview with the judges. And through all of those phases of competition, the judges are really looking for who is the most well-rounded, who can represent the organization and themselves on the best level. And it's really all about presenting your unique self like you would be proud of. And I think it's an amazing opportunity for girls to meet each other as well. So that's what I started out as. And then, you know, you go to the state competition. And then after that, you head to the national competition.
What are some of the things that you've learned about yourself on this journey?
I've learned, and I think this is something that it was hard for me to understand as a teen. I've learned that I'm always changing and that there's always something more for me to learn. Mm. I think in this position, you know, when you're going on stage, you're told and you want to be your most confident self. And in my mind as a teenager, I thought that meant that I was creating a final product of myself and that I had nowhere else. Like when I went on stage, I would have to be the best version of myself and that there would be nowhere else for me to grow, if that makes any sense. I had a lot of pressure to be perfect. And so I realize now that when I go on stage, I don't have to be perfect or a final version of myself, the finished product. I just have to be willing to be consistent and willing to continue working on myself. Mm-hmm. So that's what really gave me just this different energy this time when I competed. I have been telling a lot of people that I felt totally different this time when I competed than I did in any previous years. I felt this odd sense of calm because I didn't feel like I had to put on a front. And I didn't know that I was going to do well in the competition. I was kind of just going with the flow. But really something changed inside of me that made me feel like the person I am today has been consistent. I've been showing up for myself. I've been showing up for my community. So I'm willing to do that in the future. And I'm willing to do that as Miss Wisconsin if I'm chosen. And I'm also willing to do that if I'm not chosen.
I don't particularly know much about the pageant life. What I do know is that we don't always hear a lot about or see a lot of Black women, women of color in these competitions. And so I just wonder, what has that been like for you if you were the only one, one of a handful, like what that experience has been as a Black woman?
It definitely affected my self-esteem going into it. But I feel like my whole life has prepared me for this because I grew up in a lot of predominantly white spaces, went to PWI schools my whole life. Even from preschool, I remember being the only one in my class and kids asking me questions about my hair or my skin. And then, you know, growing up, going into middle school, going into different competitions like forensics or science Olympiad, where I was always the only one who looked like me. So going into the pageant industry, it wasn't anything that I didn't expect, but it affected my self-confidence at first because I'm watching these videos in middle school and math class and I'm looking at former Miss Americas and I'm thinking I have to be just like them, that I have to reflect the same experiences, that my hair has to look the same. And so I always talk about how my hair journey is so important to me. I love still straightening my hair sometimes now, but at the time that I started competing, I felt like I had to have straight hair and that I had to talk a certain way and that I had to dress a certain way and that there was things about myself that I couldn't share. So I straightened my hair and, you know, I would tend to code switch a lot more, change the octave of my voice when I talked. I would definitely not always share as much of my culture or my experiences. And so I did this a lot because I felt like it was the blueprint for my success. But I think as I came into my womanhood and as I went into college, I just gradually became more comfortable with wearing my hair the way I wanted to, not for the pageants, but just as myself. There was one summer I was like, I'm not getting my hair braided this weekend. I'm just going to, you know, wear my hair as it is. And then I ended up growing more confident in it. And so I saw people started to actually like it. They complimented me. And it's sad that I had to get to that point as an adult and also wait for people to kind of say, this is okay. But it's something that I feel like we all go through as Black women. You're so worried about what other people think, you know, within our own community and then also what people think on the outside of our community. And it's really all about just finding what works for you and being patient with yourself because society has so much pressure on us. So being in the pageant industry specifically, looking up to people, not seeing myself, pressured me to be something else, but it became a journey for me of self-love and self-discovery that I had to take. And now I'm so honored I get to represent people on this level and hopefully inspire other people to just be their true selves and represent themselves however they want.
I'm WUWM's race and ethnicity reporter, Taryn Powell, and I'm speaking with Miss Wisconsin winner, Willow Newell.
So winning the Miss Wisconsin competition as the first Black woman to do that, what does that title mean to you?
It's really a dream come true. And I have been trying, I feel like the hardest thing about the past few days has been trying to really fully comprehend everything that it means, not just to me and my family, but to the entire world. I've received such beautiful messages from people from all over, different organizations, different like BET and different influencers. And I never thought, especially even going into competition week, that my life would change so much or that I'd be able to have such a large influence in such a short amount of time. And so I have made my younger self proud, but I'm also hoping that I can make everyone proud throughout the year. So it's a lot of pressure. You know, every day when I go to an event, I'm like, I have to make sure I'm posting this amount so people can see the impact I'm making and that I'm saying the right things in my interviews and that I'm making sure I share enough of my story so that people can hopefully be inspired. It's a lot, but it's also like a huge blessing. You know, the times when I get stressed or think, am I doing things the right way? I'm like, wow, I'm so blessed that I'm the person who gets to be a part of this and be a part of a larger picture.
How are you making sure to take care of yourself?
Absolutely. Thank you for asking that. I really appreciate that. I am learning how to take care of myself. I will be meeting with my therapist today, actually. So therapy is always super important. Being able to even just talk to someone. My family has been so supportive. So finding a community. I know not everyone has a huge support from family, whether it be family or friends or just someone you know. That's really what keeps me grounded. Mm-hmm. If I have a hard day, whether it be I'm doing so much running from one place to another, or if I start to doubt myself or lack confidence, or even those days when I just get really tired, because it does happen sometimes. Like yesterday was a super long day for me, so I just kind of went home and I passed out. Mm-hmm. Taking that time to not only tell someone about my feelings, this sounds very cliche, but journaling about it or writing it down, and then taking time to just relax, like to stop doing things. My phone is on Do Not Disturb at a certain time during the day. So I have to tell myself to stop checking emails, stop checking social media, and then to do things I love, that I enjoy, going to the gym. I love working out. I also love listening to music. I watch a lot of anime. So just doing things that I really enjoy kind of keeps me grounded and centered, so that when I go back out into the world and do things like go to an event or a festival or a fair, I can be the best version of myself.
You have this community initiative, Expression Without Exclusion. Tell me more about that and how this win, your Miss Wisconsin win, is furthering what you're doing there.
Well, I knew that I wanted to have this community service initiative when I looked back at my childhood, and I remember the first time that I went to the theater and saw my favorite musical, which is Les Mis. Mm. And I remember the emotion that I got from this musical. It was the words, it was the music for me. And the special thing about me seeing this was I went to the Racine Theater Guild to see it. So this is a community theater, all volunteer. And I realized how special it is for us to be able to create spaces of art for people who otherwise might not be able to go out and see a show, go to Broadway, go to Chicago. Not everyone can afford a streaming service, so we all can't have that experience that way. And so I wanted to be able to create spaces for people to enjoy art and access art as Miss Wisconsin. And I'm so grateful I get to do that. But my community service initiative is all about going into nursing homes, going into schools. I like to spark creativity in kids at nursing homes, bringing in maybe musical pieces from Disney or just things that they love to hear so that they get a bit of joy in their day from something that's a little bit different and fun.
Yeah.
And then also social media is what I use to reach people and share with everyone why the arts are relevant. Because a lot of people, especially now, when we cut funding in schools, we're cutting the arts. Mm. They don't think the arts are important. And so I've worked with the Wisconsin Arts Board and also been sharing on social media that the arts are not only influential in our lives when it comes to touching our hearts and allowing us to connect with people, but also it boosts our economy. There are so many people who have jobs outside of the arts who were once influenced by an art teacher or an art class, or were able to express themselves in various ways. So my community service initiative is all about that. It's all about sharing why the arts are important, getting into schools, getting into nursing homes, and then working with the Wisconsin Arts Board to create new plans, because they've been here for so long and they've been working on this to change our communities on a daily basis. So the fact that I get to work with them is such an honor to continue furthering that mission.
But I want to allow some space for you to share any final thoughts you have.
I think this was honestly the perfect interview. Well, seriously, I have been going around and running around, and the questions that you asked made me feel like I could share a lot about myself that I haven't been able to share. So thank you so much.
What is the next phase? What happens after Miss Wisconsin?
Yes. So Miss America is in September this year. It's the 2nd through the 7th in Orlando, Florida. So I'll be going to compete with all the other young women who were crowned their state titles and have the opportunity to hopefully earn that national title. It's the hugest honor of my life. You know, looking up to somebody Miss America's, I'm like, wow, yeah. I'm going. Like, this is a real opportunity I get. So I'm so excited. It'll be an entire week with preliminary nights and then a final competition, and it'll be live streamed on the Miss America website.
Willow, I feel like we learned so much. Congratulations and good luck in the Miss America pageant. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Willow Newell was recently named Miss Wisconsin. She spoke with WUWM's race and ethnicity reporter, Taryn Powell, and you can hear more of their conversation at WUWM.com. Ryan Fury is a business owner and mother living in Greenfield, Wisconsin, one of the many sprawling suburbs surrounding Milwaukee. Her business, Handmade MKE, specializes in items like jeweled headbands or hair clips, dog collars, and guitar straps. Along with her husband, Will, she's raising a 12-year-old daughter and looking toward the future. Earlier this year, WUWM committed to covering issues our listeners have said are top priorities, including the economy. As a part of that coverage, we're exploring how the economy is impacting Wisconsinites with different financial needs and concerns. Ryan joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers to talk about how the economy is impacting her right now and how she's preparing for the future.
I've been selling on Etsy for about 11 years now, and each day is up for grabs, but I try my best, and it's been getting better year over year, so I'm pretty lucky.
Very nice. Now, you are also married. What does your husband do?
Yes, I'm married to Will. He is an electrical test engineer. He works for a company that's subcontracted by our government, so he works hand in hand with the Navy. I'll say that.
What are some of your concerns right now? Because I will say right off the bat, both of you have careers that could be heavily impacted by the current presidential administration.
Yeah. Okay. So for me personally, because of the way that my business is set up, the tariffs affect me directly. I buy a lot of my rhinestone trims and fabric and other raw materials, I'll say, overseas simply because they are not made in the U.S. It's literally China and then maybe one other country that produces the things that I need to buy. So I really have no other opportunity or choice but to buy them from overseas. So with the tariffs going into effect, obviously I have the choice of do I buy now and charge people more because the price is going to go up because the price goes up for me, or do I just hold off and wait and kind of cross my fingers? So I have been holding off, crossing my fingers that, you know, things go back down to the baseline 10% tariff, maybe a little bit more. But I probably have about a month left before I get into a really tricky spot where I kind of have to decide, do I take some of my products off the line? Do I completely change them? Do I shut down one of my businesses? Because I have two Etsy stores. And then for Will, he's been with his company for, I want to say, like 11 or 12 years. He has a great position. I think he's going to be okay. I mean, I don't think defense spending is going to go down at all, right? And I think we've gotten even a little bit more in this latest bill. So I think he's fine. And I do feel like we are in a better position than a lot of people just because of when we bought our house, his job stability, yeah, how we kind of structured our savings and our budget and everything. But I mean, I'm concerned about like grocery prices going up when we have to go back to school shopping. Like everything is going to be affected, and that's going to, you know, determine how much we can put away for retirement and family vacations. So
yeah,
can I answer that?
Yeah, no, I think those are all the kinds of concerns that we're hearing from people in general. Now, how old is your daughter?
She's 12 and a half.
And what does she do generally? She, of course, goes to school. What are the kinds of activities that she does?
She is a really good student. She's got 4.0. She's very proud of that. She plays violin. She does soccer. She does tennis, but she doesn't completely love tennis. She skis. She's a really amazing artist. I like to say that I pass that along, but she'll give my mom the credit for that. She just, you know, hops right over me. And she, you know, she likes online gaming with her friends. And yeah.
Does she go to a public school?
She does, and she goes to a really good public school. The whole reason that we bought our house in Greendale was because we were looking at the public school systems, and Greendale has a great one. And we've had amazing teachers. I can't say enough good things about public school.
Does she engage with any of the kinds of programs, like before school programs or after school programs?
Before school programs, she did like choir and orchestra. And then after school, they do have like a lot of different clubs, especially middle school. So she did like cooking club, they do student activity night, and there's like tens of other ones that she just didn't partake in.
When you see the kinds of budget cuts that are coming for schools especially, do you have any concerns when you look at the Greendale Public Schools, or do you think, you know, you guys are in a relatively safe bubble?
I think we are in a safe bubble, especially compared to like MPS, but I don't see how we're not going to be affected. And she doesn't have like an IEP, so she's not going to be directly affected, but I know a lot of her friends do, and I don't see a positive outcome for cutting those programs.
Yeah. As you are looking just kind of at the year ahead, what are your expectations? What are your fears? You know, so when next we speak in, you know, 3-4 months, where do you think you're going to be?
I think 3-4 months. So hopefully, I think we are going to be getting solar panels put on our house. We are trying to rush that through before the credit expires at the end of the year. So hopefully that's all taken care of. Hopefully the tariffs go back down and business is running smoothly again. Typically, the fall through the winter season is like my busy time. So we're crossing our fingers for that. And I mean, hopefully being able to afford going down to Tennessee. My sister's going to be having her baby around-ish that time. And I hope that we can afford to travel, get an Airbnb. But I don't know.
We shall see.
We shall see.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Ryan Fury is a business owner and mother living in Greenfield, Wisconsin. She spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers as part of our check-in series where we hear from Milwaukee voices on the changing economic landscape. At WUWM.com, you can find more of our coverage on economic issues concerning Wisconsinites. Did you know Wisconsin is home to the largest refracting telescope in the entire world? We'll tell you about it and other things you can do and see at Yerkes Observatory later in the show. But first, we'll take a trip down Milwaukee Music Memory Lane with the Wisconsin Poster Collection at the Milwaukee Public Library. Stay tuned to Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. The library is more than just books, and our series with the Milwaukee Public Library called Books and Beyond showcases just that. We share resources, book recommendations, and some cool stuff you just might not know about yet. Today, we're exploring the Wisconsin Concert Poster Collection. It's a unique showcase of local music history in the early 1980s in and around Milwaukee. Bands like the Violent Femmes were just getting started, plus groups like Couch Flambeau, Einstein's Rice Boys, and so many others. To learn more, I met with Rare Books librarian Timothy Rush, who starts by explaining how these posters were first collected.
The collection started, as a lot of our collections do, with a singular donation. So in 2002, a man named Steve Bertolas-Jeske donated to us this sizable amount of probably around 150, 160 Milwaukee concert posters, also a few that are from scattered outside of Milwaukee, Madison, that area. So we do call it the Wisconsin Concert Poster Collection. But he had a personal collection for years. He had grown up outside of Milwaukee, but his grandparents lived in Milwaukee, and he would come and visit. And when he visited, they lived just south of Brady Street, which was a hopping area for Milwaukee music and all of the venues down there. And so he would just walk up, and then he would just pull down as many concert posters as he could. and he would accumulate that over time. And he loved doing that so much that eventually, you know, he would do it throughout his college age, et cetera. And so it just collects this very specific time period around the early 80s of all of those bands and those posters and those venues. And so it's this really nice little slice of history.
Absolutely. And the start of the collection, if we want to talk about a specific poster, it's of Dead Kennedys concert in a venue that turns out is now one of the library's branches.
Oh, yeah. So one of the things that is beautiful about the history of the venues that you see is like things like that, which is that there is this Dead Kennedys concert that takes place at Top of the Hill at the corner of Mitchell and 9th, which is exactly Mitchell Street Library now. It had previously been a department store, and then once the department store closed, it had basically lay empty for a while and then was transitioned to being a venue for a bunch of different things, including a Dead Kennedys concert. And now, many years later, we ended up getting the money and funding to renovate that space, and now it's the gorgeous Mitchell Street Library.
I love all this, like, little tidbits of unique Milwaukee history, and you, of course, mentioned Brady Street. And Brady Street in the 80s obviously had a lot of venues, but it was also, like, a hub for Milwaukee's counterculture scene, amongst other places on the east side. So how is that reflected in some of the bands featured in this collection here?
Oh, you see all sorts of stuff. Like, the best thing is that these posters vary from really well-produced printed objects that, like, we stole designs from Japan, or we found clip art of a lady from Egypt. But you also get, like, hand-drawn. You get Sharpie written with, you know, skeletons with mohawks and picking their nose and violent acts. The most prominent example is probably the poster we have that is for a councilman's, like, fundraiser effort. And the poster is literally for an event called Rock Against Reaganomics, which features a little caricature of Ronald Reagan sitting at the bottom of a cliff and a bunch of people trying to push a rock off of the cliff. So there is some very marked political commentary in a lot of this, and there's a lot of fun bits of history that are captured as well.
What decade would you say is kind of most prominently featured in this collection?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is the 1980s is by far the most prominently featured. There's some that get scattered in from other periods, but like 80 to 84 is the vast majority of it. When we originally digitized this collection back in like 2016, 2017, under the purview of the then Digitization Library in Liz County, we really dived into trying to figure out information about both when these concerts were and where they were. So a lot of the information we needed to research was figuring out, okay, if we know what day of the week it is and what day it is, can we figure out what year it took place? And that's actually fairly straightforward. Even trickier was taking the of venues which didn't necessarily say where they were and figuring out where were any of these venues actually were. While like a lot of them were collected around Brady Street, the venues exhibited in here are from all over. And what ended up being a really invaluable resource to researching the history of Milwaukee venues was actually the Wisconsin LGBTQ History Project. They have a history of all of the gay bars and lesbian bars and et cetera across Milwaukee in that time period. And it turns out they do a great job of listing both what they were when they were those counterculture and specialized bars, but also the other names that those venues had previously and before. And so I really couldn't find where a venue called the Lost Dutchman's Mine was, but it turns out it was also like known as the Unicorn at one point, and that allowed me to figure out and pinpoint exactly where it was, and then I could figure that out. And it was so grateful that somebody else had preserved that history so that we could track it through this.
That's one of the things that I love about just the heart of special collections. Like, one, it's usually based off of someone donating things they've collected, and we can't save history unless someone is doing that, right? Mm-hmm. And you were also showing me some posters before we started recording here, and some are just for fun of made-up bands. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Oh, yeah. So what was really fun was when we digitized this, we also had started a Flickr group at that time. It's defunct at this point, where we were trying to get members of the public to share digital images of their collections, because unsurprisingly, most people who collect posters like this don't want to donate them while they're still alive. And so they're like, but maybe I'll share images of it. And we wanted to collate that information. But it also meant that we were getting stories from folks. And we got to find out that, like, sometimes bands would just make up other bands to put on the bills because it made them laugh and it didn't matter, or it would make it sound like there was a bigger bill than it was just Sacred Order. So, like, one of the posters we have is, you know, Sacred Order, and then it goes with, can't remember the second band, but the third band is just the Dairy Queens from Hell, which should clue you in that it's not a real band, but it is just really funny on this giant wall of different names. And then you start to go, wait, are all of these bands fake? And there's no, a lot of these bands with their very outrageous names were very real, and a lot of them had a lot of really great music.
And I'm thinking here, it's like, this is just an indication of what marketing looked like pre-internet for bands, right? Because I feel like you go to concerts nowadays and posters aren't really as heavily featured on the merch table, right? So with the kind of zine quality of people making posters as simple or as complicated as they want it to be, what do you feel is the importance of preserving this type of history of especially local music in this unique way?
Oh, so, like, the other thing is that half of these bands, like, I will try to research, and because this is the 80s, they don't have a web presence. You maybe get them mentioned because they showed up in the thumb notes of a Die Kreuzen or a Violent Femmes article. But a lot of these folks don't get their story really told. Interestingly enough, one of the bands that is kind of like almost, I don't want to call it a footnote, but not one of the big Milwaukee bands of the time, is actually the source of one of the donations to the collection. After we had digitized the collection, eventually folks would discover it, and one of those folks was Dan Quass, who had been the lead singer of the Sidewalks back in the 80s, and he donated his personal collection of all of his Sidewalks-related posters, and interestingly enough, he also donated all of the newspapers that had covered his band, which was the first copy of The Express that we actually had in print here. Oh, wow. At the Milwaukee Public Library. A lot of those smaller press newspapers we apparently did not collect actively at the time. We actually were going over this yesterday. We don't have the vast majority of The Crazy Shepherd. We don't have a lot of The Express in paper form. Some of it we have in microfilm, but like to have an actual Express newspaper was so nice. And it's great that we were able to get one via this venue. But yeah, these bands, both in terms of what they were singing about and the types of songs, the genres, like the really fun thing is that this collection is unsurprisingly a lot of punk music, but it's also a lot of new age music, which was like the other big music genre that was in Milwaukee at that time. You've got folks like Sigmund Snopek who show up in these posters. And while another fairly unsung hero of Milwaukee music, I mean, just recently, last year, somebody put out a 6.5-hour documentary about him entitled The Complete History of Space-Time Destination Milwaukee. And it was really interesting to discover that because Snopek is one of the few bands that I was able to find and still had like this huge genre and this huge oeuvre of music that he had performed. And it was actually the one band that got me to buy an LP. I was like, oh, wait, this song is great. I'm going to buy this Snopek LP. And sure enough, I tracked one down. And so that's the one like Milwaukee music that from this collection that made me go, I want that for my own collection.
I love that. So as you mentioned, there's kind of two individuals that donated the majority of this collection. It's also available digitally. People can make an appointment, come view it for themselves. Is this also kind of a living, breathing collection? Are you always looking for more?
Oh, absolutely. We happily would accept more donations. So MPLArchives@milwaukee.gov, give us an email. we are happy to talk to you and figure out, you know, if you are wanting to donate posters, if you're wanting to donate your actual like music, your manuscripts, you know, the books you used to write all your lyrics in. We love to preserve that information for future public and so that people can learn and enjoy and see those bits that maybe didn't make, you know, the encyclopedia, but that's still part of Milwaukee's important history. But yeah, also everything available via appointment. Please, again, that same email, let us know. We take appointments during the week so that you can come in and see this stuff. And we're a public library collection. It's not locked away in a vault. It's here to enrich you, the Milwaukee public.
Timothy Rush is the Rare Books Librarian at the Milwaukee Public Library. We explore the Wisconsin Concert Poster Collection in the Rare Books Room, and you can see photos and find out more information at WUWM.com. We'll take one more break, and when we come back, we'll tell you about the Yerkes Observatory near Lake Geneva and what you can see on a visit there.
We're not giving a tour of the universe. We're not traveling to Neptune and talking about the radial velocity of some star. This is about human achievement.
That's next on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. This is Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. There are few places in Wisconsin that could claim as many discoveries as the Yerkes Observatory near Lake Geneva. The observatory is more than a century old and houses the world's largest refracting telescope. It's been visited by the likes of Carl Sagan and Albert Einstein. But it's more than just a place to study the stars. There's art, architecture, and sprawling gardens to enjoy there as well. To share more about what you can do on a visit there, Lake Effect's Becky Mortensen is joined by Walt Chaddock from the Observatory and Amanda Weibel from Travel Wisconsin.
Let's start with the history of the observatory. It opened in 1897. What can you tell me about the origins of the observatory?
This was the brainchild of the astronomer George Hale. He got all this money from the guy who had built the L train in Chicago, which is crazy, Charles Yerkes got wealthy in those early days of public transportation in Chicago, and they needed to get away from the smoke of the factories. They needed to get away from the Industrial Revolution of Chicago. And back then, Wisconsin to Chicagoans was like Alaska. And so they were chasing clear skies. They knew city lights were on the way, and they needed to get up on this little ridge overlooking Geneva Lake. And they built this architectural masterpiece that would become the world's first graduate PhD program for this new field of study, astrophysics.
So we can't talk about the observatory without talking about the Great Refractor. So what can you tell us about this telescope?
It is a goosebump-inducing tube of joy that when people enter this giant dome that has remained this mysterious edifice for 130 years, they're overcome with childlike exuberance. I've seen it happen, y'all, over and over and over, and it happens to our staff. Every time you open these really loud vault doors, you're looking at what has remained the largest refracting telescope in the world. And what that is a lens telescope, as opposed to the newer style, which use mirrors, the reflecting telescopes. These lens telescopes are things of beauty. And the Great Refractor, right here in southern Wisconsin, is a 40-inch diameter couplet of lenses with a 63.5 to 65-foot long tube in this stunning dome, and it is working and used, and we use it for public observation and private research, and it is a sight to behold.
Yeah, you talked about the big dome, this big room, the floor moves. It's like this whole operation there. So let's talk about some of the discoveries made because of the Great Refractor. What are some notable things that have been achieved at the Yerkes Observatory?
We can go through some neat ones. Like you're talking about a who's who of noteworthy astronomers have passed through these halls. Edwin Hubble was there in the World War I era, so the 19-teens, and he wrote his doctoral dissertation called Photographic Investigations of Faint Nebulae. And in this is the early stages of him figuring out that the Milky Way was not the only galaxy. Y'all, we, until 101 years ago, thought that the Milky Way was it. Since then, we figured out there are probably at least 2 trillion galaxies. So when my grandparents were alive, they thought there was one galaxy. And because of the work of Edwin Hubble and others at Yerkes and later in California chasing clear skies, we figured out Andromeda was galaxy number 2, and we would go on to understand that there are 2 trillion. I would say the number 1 discovery at Yerkes, William Morgan in 1951 at Yerkes Observatory figured out the shape of our galaxy, the Milky Way. That shape, that spiral arm shape, was discovered in Wisconsin by William Morgan in 1951. Carl Sagan studied there. I would say Carl Sagan did something for astronomy that no one else had done before. He made it cool. So when you think about Edwin Hubble, Carl Sagan, William Morgan, and then Gerard Kuiper figuring out everything on the other side of Neptune at Yerkes Observatory.
So let's talk about what people can see there today. There are a variety of tours that people can take at the observatory. Can you talk about what that experience is like?
We have tried to reimagine what a tour is and tried to make it hilarious. That's one point. We've tried to be science communicators who are talking about architecture, because it's certainly an architectural masterpiece. We're talking about landscape design because we're an Olmsted site. We're talking about the history of photography, because at the same time photography was burgeoning, the telescopes were able to put cameras on them. And so the pictures of space beyond the moon that were taken for the very first time were taken at Yerkes Observatory. And so we have 180,000 glass plate pictures of space. So we show visitors those. We also are this really cool art center now, and we're collaborating with artists and making art ourselves that is inspired by astronomy. So there are pieces hanging in these neat corridors by Eric Carroll, the digital artist from Asheville, North Carolina. There's sculpture in the yard based on Einstein's field notes by Ashley Zielinski, who was the official sculptor for the James Webb Space Telescope. So we're really obsessed with unexpected outcomes. What we are doing is a little performance, a little entertainment, a little education, some fantastic customer service, and just trying to have people leave going, "That's not what I expected." And oh my God, that was so sweet.
So you did mention the architecture. The observatory was built to be a place to study things that are far away, but the building itself is worth seeing. Can you talk a little bit about the architecture of the building?
You bet. Henry Ives Cobb, C-O-B-B, is our architect. He had built the University of Chicago's main campus down in Chicago. He built the Newberry Library, which is a remarkable bibliographical edifice, but he was just set free up on this 50-acre plot of land in Wisconsin. And this kind of Romanesque Beaux-Art hodgepodge of styles to match George Hale's astronomically based brain is a masterpiece in the Roman cross shape. It has 3 domes. It has this terrazzo marble floor and these marble walls that are just so soothing and calming. It has the Hagenau Rotunda that you enter, and he's using all these tricks of the eye and architecture that's called a trompe l'oeil. He's making you come in and look up at these skylights and these owls flying in their decorative columns, and it's just riddled with this ornamental sort of majesty that we'll see people outside, like even when we're closed, they're just looking at these columns and all of this Roman brick and terracotta for hours. And photography nuts, they love it. But just anybody who is into things that last, things that were made well, things that were cared for, is just totally digging on this Henry Ives Cobb architecture.
Lake Geneva is a very popular destination for summer travel. So, Amanda, I'm going to turn to you. What are some other things that people could check out on a visit there this summer?
Well, as the name implies, you're certainly going to want to experience the lake. And while the city is named Lake Geneva, the lake is actually called Geneva Lake. And one of the best ways to see it is the Geneva Lakeshore Path. This is a walking path that hugs the shoreline of the lake and takes you through the backyards of all the grand mansions that sit on the water. It runs for over 20 miles, and each property owner puts their own spin on it. So some of the sections of the path are grass or dirt, and others are concrete and brick, but it's just a stunning walking path. For even more history, plan a tour of Black Point Estate and Gardens. This is a Victorian-era mansion that's really serves as a window into the past as well. A Chicago beer baron constructed the home in 1888 as a summer retreat. And today you can come and enjoy its splendidly preserved grandeur. There were no roads when Black Point was built, so you're going to have to arrive in style by boat. You can book a guided tour of Black Point through Lake Geneva Cruise Line. And that's just one of many of their really great tour options. They also have some fun special events that are perfect for astronomy fans. On August 6th and 10th, Lake Geneva Cruise Line is going to host nighttime excursions for a chance to see the Perseid meteor shower. So that's a really fun way to go and experience the celestial event, showering the sky and shooting stars by boat.
Many Wisconsinites may have visited Lake Geneva, but what's something new or surprising that people may not have done before?
I think a lot of people are surprised to learn that Lake Geneva is actually where Dungeons and Dragons was born. So Gary Gygax grew up in Lake Geneva and co-created the game in 1974 that went on to rule the fantasy realm of all tabletop games. And visitors can learn about this slice of Lake Geneva fame at the Geneva Lake Museum. The museum has a new permanent exhibit that's called The Wizard of Lake Geneva that explores Gygax's life and legacy. You can also return in the fall, where you can experience the third annual Dragon Days Fantasy Festival. It's a fun-filled fantasy festival for families, any fantasy fan or gamer alike. And there are lots of different activities, performance, and vendors on hand. And that happens October 4th and 5th.
So the Yerkes Observatory is a historic and beautiful place, but maybe there are some people who are just not that interested in astronomy. For both of you, why would you encourage them to pay a visit to the observatory?
This is a dynamic that I witness on a daily basis, that people after our tour say almost exactly what you just said. I wasn't interested at all in astronomy, and this was awesome. Because we're not giving a tour of the universe. We're not traveling to Neptune and talking about, you know, the radial velocity of some star 20,000 light years away. This is about human achievement. This is about people. This is about an architect and masons and electricians who built a masterpiece. It's about landscape designers who got their hands dirty with their crews building an arboretum. This is about photography and the people who push the button to take the pictures. And it's about the context of humans within the study of astronomy. And so we see that every day, that people are just stunned. Like, I didn't care at all about this, and my wife dragged me here, or my boyfriend, or what, my cousin. I can't believe I never knew about this before. And so that feeling that we have makes us as excited about that kind of visitor as we get when there's an astronomy nerd. Like, it just, it's very fulfilling to like show this to the world.
Travel Wisconsin includes Yerkes Observatory as one of our wonders of Wisconsin. And that is our list of places that leave people saying, wow, I did not know that was in Wisconsin. And You can tell from this conversation why Yerkes has that distinction. I mean, it's all about where that history, science, and art collides in such a fun and unexpected way. I mean, you can stand in the halls where Albert Einstein once stood. You are learning about the people making these science-changing discoveries. You can see all of the craft and precision that went into designing the building and the grounds. And Yerkes Observatory just does such a wonderful job at making that experience approachable and fun and so memorable. So everyone who visits is going to have one of those wow moments.
Well, Walt and Amanda, thank you so much for joining me for Wandering Wisconsin.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Amanda Weibel is the Communications Officer for Travel Wisconsin. Walt Chaddick is the Director of Programs and External Affairs at Yerkes Observatory. They both join Lake Effect's Becky Mortensen for our series, Wandering Wisconsin. You can find more conversations about things to do and see around our home state at wuwm.com. And that wraps up the show for today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. If you've missed any of Lake Effect this week, you can find all of our conversations at wuwm.com. If you'd like to take the show on the go, you can download the Lake Effect podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. A new album blends indie rock with bird calls. We'll meet the Wisconsin artist behind it tomorrow in a new Chirp Chat. Plus, we'll learn how the Moms Mental Health Initiative is working to disrupt systemic disparities that negatively impact perinatal mental health care. Thank you so much for joining us today, right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM. Milwaukee's NPR.